back to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And we haven't spoken for a couple of weeks and Louise is away this week. Where are you away?
Yeah, I apologise for my sound quality. I don't have a microphone until I arrive at my final destination because it's buried in my car. But I am in Somerset near Taunton at the moment in a tiny little village that I thought was beautiful and bucolic and quaint until I came out for a walk with Riley this morning, and that it must be the M5. I don't know. It's just like this torrential noise in the background of the bucolic scene. So but it's very pretty. And so we're going for a drive around today and have a look around. And then tomorrow we set off again down to Cornwall. So we've only got 2 more hours to do tomorrow.
Oh, this is your retreat time.
My month away, yes.
Oh,
I don't mind saying that on the radio because someone's in my house. So usually we're paranoid about saying we're going away in case we get broken into. But I don't mind saying that because it's all safe there. So
that's exciting. Are you excited?
I am, actually. I was terrified when I set off. I had real anxiety for the first 2 hours of the journey just because it's a big thing to do for such a long time, and I haven't been away really for long periods of time for a long time. But then halfway down, I met up with 2 friends and went for a walk with their dogs and Riley, and everything was okay. So I was really happy I got over the anxiety. We got here, so 4.5 hours driving, I got out of the car and I couldn't stand up. My back's gone completely.
I know. And that's like that time I drove for that workshop in Yorkshire, and I think it was like 6 hours driving. And is your car automatic?
Yes.
Okay, so this was in a geared car as well, and like my left leg had like literally given up working at the hip socket after about 6 hours. I thought, I'm never doing that again.
Used to do this stuff when I was 25 or whatever and just jump out the car and carry on, but you forget. Yeah. Even though you feel like you still can do all this stuff, it's not as easy. So stretches today, lots of ibuprofen to get ready for tomorrow's 2 hour stint. So anyway, that's me.
That's good. Well, I've been ill again, boring, and art fairing at the same time. So, you know, that's a really good combination, isn't it?
Were you feeling ill during the art fair?
I was not feeling great the day I packed up. And the very first day when we were hanging, it was a bit like, oh, well, put it this way. I had my bag stuffed with sore throat, Strepsils, you know, and a thermos of tea. Yeah. But actually, I felt fine and I do feel fine. It's just a bit kind of sinusy and a bit coffee. It's just it's just tedious again. But so I thought we would get together and just kind of have a catch up and a chat with what we've been doing. Partly because it was interesting. So let me just tell you a little bit about this art fair, because it was different from any that I've done before. So usually the ones I've done before have been like artist-led ones where you hire a booth, fixed booth, like not, or if it's in a tent, it's in a huge marquee type tent with fixed solid walls. You hire your space, you show up as an artist, show your work, sell direct. Easy. This was a bit more complicated. So it was Fresh Art Fair, where you can only show if you're a gallery or an artist collective and you have to be approved. So we had to kind of build a website for the few of us that wanted to get together and show the work. So it's been something I've been thinking about for a few years, but the things putting me off have been, oh, who do I ask? Like, what's going to work well together visually without being the same? And oh my gosh, this feels like a whole load of hassle. Why would I bother? But actually, once we reached out and started having the conversations, it was lovely because I did it with 2 other artists. There were going to be 5 of us, and for various reasons a couple dropped out along the way. So I was there with Sarah Breinlinger and Jenny Fermore. Very different work. So Sarah she lives and works in East London, and has a really interesting practice that kind of ties in with her work. As I want to say, a psychiatrist, I should know, but you know, as a therapist, basically, not quite sure what level of psychiatric training she's got. I'll check. But it's really interesting work about, often about kind of how people and experiences are pieced together, very abstract work, quite playful, a lot of collage. I really like it. And Jenny's work is, she's based in Spain, and she does kind of quite graphic paintings inspired by Spanish architecture, quite strong, slightly, slightly twisted views, but quite graphic. Mm-hmm. And we didn't plan like what would work together, but it was really fun turning up on that first day, hanging it, seeing what went alongside each other. So I can kind of see the fun that galleries might have in putting things together. But everybody had stood up before that point and said, well, I'll do this bit of organizing. I'll do this bit of organizing. And it was really easy. Unloading was really easy. I was like, this art fair, this is it for the win. This is going to be great.
Hold that thought, because yeah. I was just going to say, that's the kind of part, the unloading, the hanging, where doing it with other people makes such a difference, I would imagine, because that's the part that's quite stressful on your own, especially when you're somebody who's only done one or two, or not even any, that first time you have to do all that on your own is difficult. So it'd be like a little team.
Yeah, I'm better, like you say, about packing the car. I know what I need to take now. I've got my kit. I know, I think about what needs to be unpacked in what order in terms of how I pack it. But it was just, you could get really close, and they had huge, great big trolleys. So you weren't like traipsing work across a long distance. So, and that was just easy. And I sort of know, I think the first time you do it, you panic about how long it's going to take to actually hang it. We had a stand plan, but always when you get there, it changes. Always, always, yeah. Always, always.
So you're there, you've got it all set up, you're thinking, feeling good.
Yeah.
So tell us what happened.
Day longer than normal, because we had the private view on the Thursday evening instead of the Friday. And then Friday, it was open during the day. So we thought, bonus, extra day. This is going to be good. By Sunday morning, I had one tiny sale. So like that was officially the worst time ever showing work. So I just wanted to talk about, before we get into what happened next, how that felt, because it was quite interesting that it was both pretty crummy as a feeling, but also we felt like the work looked great. Is there anything we should do? Should we rehang? Should we change it? Can we do anything? Mm-mm.
Were they also not selling?
No, Jenny had sold right. By that stage. So, but it felt like a lot wasn't selling. So there were a couple of galleries further along who we know, who've got fantastic work, great selection of artists. Also, it felt like they were really struggling. Now, what was interesting was on Sunday, when I went down to the packing station and I said to the guys, how has it been today? And they said, oh, slower today than yesterday. For them, doing the packing and the wrapping, Saturday was a good day. But from everybody around us, it didn't feel like that. But there were lots of people. We were having a lot of conversations. Things just weren't kind of going over that loop. And while at that point it was disappointing, I was just aware that in previous years that would have been enough to, like, I would have been in tears in the loo,
yeah,
you know, giving up the ghost, feeling it was all, like, it was all my work that was wrong, all of those kind of things. And it didn't actually feel like that, much as I went in on Sunday morning and I was like, let's make today the day that it happens. And everyone's saying, you know, hope you have a really good fair. And then I'm doing like little dances in the corridor going, well, it will be if you buy something.
Why do you think you weren't in the toilets crying? What's changed?
I always think that at events like that, one of the really good things is what you learn from putting all your work up and looking at it together. And particularly perhaps with the three of us, that made it more fun. But looking at it together, you can really appreciate what you've done to get it to that stage and learn from your own work. And I think it was also particularly nice. You know, you always get the interesting conversations and feedback from people about what they like. And the thing that I find interesting about those is you know instinctively whether they confirm something that's already within you, or actually it feels easy when it, sometimes it just slides off. You know, you can kind of have conversations with certain people's responses and you think, yeah, it doesn't feel like that for me. Just kind of goes. So I think it's just a longer term being grounded a little bit more in your own practice. And on Sunday, we were all saying, yeah, I'm just really excited to get back to work now.
So even if you hadn't sold anymore, because I haven't talked to you, so I don't know, but I'm guessing because you've said by that point, so I'm guessing something else is coming. But if you had, if nothing else would have happened,
yeah,
would you... you still would have felt inspired to come back and do more work.
Yeah. I would have been disappointed.
Yeah.
I would have thought, like, what went wrong with that show? But I think I would have moved on pretty quickly from actually there was nothing that differently that I could have done.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things because, you know, what actually happened was couple came along and they bought two big paintings. So that was the biggest single sale that I've ever had to one person.
Excellent.
And then another couple came along kind of slightly towards the end and they were umming and ahhing about frames and this one and this one together, or this one and this one together, or this one and this one together. And that's when I did my slightly pushy sales part and said, well, look, because they said, oh, we could come to the studio and choose. And I thought, no, now, do it now. So I said to them, why don't you take them home with you? So they said, oh, well, how would that work? And I said, well, pay me a £200 deposit. And, you know, I trust you. And I also know, how much easier it is to make a decision when you see a painting in the right place.
Yeah.
And again, that involves a degree of trust, I think. You know, they're walking off with paintings worth quite a bit more than that. You really going to let them go with just £200? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Because most people can be trusted.
Yeah.
And most of the time we can trust our own instincts. And I suppose there's the odd occasion where your instincts would be off. And they would give you a false address and they would just take the paintings. But it's so, I think I've always found this in life that a lot of most people seem to focus on that 0.5% of people who might plan to do the bad thing and not on the 99.5% of people who never would. And therefore set their policies and how they deal in business around the 0.5% instead of setting their policies around the good people and lose so many sales as a result. And I'm talking big retail chains as well as small individual people, just the way they treat people. When I used to work for HMV, do you remember the record retailer?
Yeah.
This is one for the younger listeners. There used to be these things called records and you used to play them on a record player. And we had a policy that you would take anything back. People could bring anything back and we'd just give them a refund. They bought it at Virgin, whatever, just give them a refund. And it was such a successful business strategy.
Yeah.
And at some point, that company got bought out and the first thing they changed was that, right, no refunds unless you can prove there's something wrong with it and da 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 da. And I just thought, how stupid, because really it didn't cost anything. You put that record back up for sale. Sorry, everyone. Behind the scenes secrets, those records went back up for sale. So nobody lost out. But what it did do is build goodwill among customers. So well done you for doing that, because I just think it takes a lot of trust, but it's not a big risk.
No, and I've done it before at home, like when I've done open studios from home, because you feel like, you know, that really is a relationship on a different level. Somebody is in your home. Those are all local people. It just feels like a local trustworthy event. I've never done it before at an art fair like this, where it is pure strangers. So it was quite interesting to see that it felt okay to do that. And I had to scratch my head a little bit and think, oh, well, how will this actually work? Because I've got to give you a payment slip so that you can take it out of the door and
right, you
know, all of those kind of things. Would I have done that on the Friday? I don't know. I might have said, why don't you take it home? And if it's not right, if you bring it back again, if you're local. But I think those kind of things, they come out of the conversation that you have with the buyer. And, you know, I could tell that they were excited. They were just finding it difficult to make a decision about which two would go together. You know,
it's funny if the end of the story was, and then I rang them and it said number disconnected.
Yeah, well, the funny thing was, you say, oh, got their address, and I'm thinking, oh, I didn't even have their address at this point, or all I had was an email that I could have written down wrong, or a mobile phone number. But actually what happened was, when he was leaving the deposit in my card reader, he left his credit card in the card reader. So I just noticed that after they'd left. So I was like, oh, thank goodness I had the like wherewithal, because I've done this before, like not written down somebody's contact details. But this time I did have his mobile phone number and I could ring him up quick and say, have you gone that far? Because I've still got your credit card here. So I did know that the mobile phone number worked. So
yeah,
that was a little test. So it was just really interesting how it went from feeling like this is the worst event ever, how do I actually feel about this, to, in combination with the studio sale, it's been my best month ever. And that turnaround happened within like a matter of hours. And it just made me think, if I'd had the choice, would I have given up and gone home on Sunday morning? How often do we do that to ourselves? Maybe stop just too soon.
Yes. It's such a good point, because we go on the past to predict the future. Mm. So we, whether it's a short term of a weekend or a whole year, maybe someone's painting for a year and not getting any interest, and they're trying to get galleries or whatever, and nobody's interested, and they just say, I've been doing this a year now. So our brain goes, well, if you've done it for a year and nothing happened, then the next year nothing will happen, and the year after that nothing will happen, because it's all we know. All our brain can understand is what's already happened.
Mm.
And so that's the importance, just like you say, of keeping going, whether it's on a one weekend art fair or a whole art career. Because just because for the last 10 years nobody has discovered you as an artist, doesn't mean in year 11 this amazing art dealer isn't going to show up and buy all your paintings at once. You just don't know. You just don't know. But we act as if we do. And what I loved about that story is, you were saying you were on Sunday morning singing and saying, this is going to be the best day. This is good.
Because I did the same on Saturday too. I did the same on Saturday. Yeah. We were all like Saturday's going to be a great day. And then like,
but if you took that as on Sunday, well, we tried that yesterday, that didn't work, let's just all sit here glumly and wait for the end of the day so we can pack up and go home. Mm-hmm. Probably those sales might not have happened. Well, wouldn't have happened. Because I've been to art fair where the person is looking depressed in the corner, or even one famous one where she had her chair turned. They all had chairs and she had hers turned with her back to everyone walking by and was reading a book.
Yeah.
Like, literally, don't talk to me. So
yeah, I love it, because I do find the psychology of the whole thing quite interesting, both from my point of view, like how I respond to things, and also how other people, you know, watching people make decisions. And it did feel a little bit different this time. Like, there were a lot of people who on other years I would be like, okay, that's a dead cert. Yes, they're going to go for a coffee and come back.
Mm.
You know, and so there were things that were different about it again. But this is the point, is that every time is different. And I think your thing about, you know, from experience, all I know from experience is that every time is different. Mm-hmm. You've just got to keep putting those things in the pot, haven't you? We had We had an artist on yesterday. We do an action hour thing in the membership, and she came on and she said, "Oh, I've got to put a painting up online, and oh, I really don't like doing that, putting a painting up for sale." I was like, "And it'll probably be sold by the end of the day." And she's like, "Oh yeah, that would be nice." Only flipping sold within the hour, because she's built that relationship with her collectors that they know when something is coming. So all she has to do is a single pose, no collections, just like, here's a painting, it's ready. Here's a painting, it's ready. And yeah. I don't know how that would be. Like, maybe she's, but it was interesting that even with that experience of this is how she sells her work, she still had that kind of like, oh, you'd think you'd imagine that her experience would be like, oh yeah, today's the day I get to put a painting up.
Yeah.
And someone yeah. gets to buy it, because that's kind of what happens for her. Everyone else is like, whoa.
That brings up an interesting point too, about when you've had that experience where you do sell, because I had an artist come to me about this just recently. She always sells well. She put a new collection up and they didn't sell as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she's crushed, even though I think she was on like 5 or 6 collections that did well. This one hasn't, and she's really crushed. And I found that level of being crushed surprising, given that, well, you know, you have a strong track record. For whatever reason, maybe the work's changed just enough that the previous collectors are not as into it as they were that other stuff. Maybe it's the economic climate. Maybe it's just the day you released it and the right people weren't online, or whatever it is. It's one little blip in that long journey when these things don't work. Like, if you go to that fair and come back with only one little painting sold, it's still only one blip. Even if, for this woman I'm talking about, even if these paintings, and I thought they were very good and appealing, and I don't see why they didn't sell, but even if they had been too different, too something, even if they weren't commercially appealing, it's really not that important, is it?
More than that, in a way, I wonder if it can actually be a relief and a release in some way, because I think it's interesting when you start out, like, you know, we have aspirations and things that we want and we think, oh, it'd be fantastic, you know, I have work that sells. But it's a little bit like, I don't know, maybe music artists who do really well, or novelists, you know, you do really well with a first book. Uh-oh. Then what happens with the second one? Like, there's a pressure. And even when things are going well, there comes a sense of expectation, however much. I don't believe anybody who says they don't like it when they get some kind of external validation. Now, maybe that's just me and I can't imagine that. So, you know, without a doubt, if I hadn't sold anything, would I have felt low about it? Yeah, absolutely. Would it have stopped me making art and doing whatever comes next? No.
Mm.
And I don't think it would change the kind of art that I make or what I'm interested in doing next either. But I do think that perhaps sometimes when things don't go well, when they don't go how you expect, when you have to confront these kind of feelings of, oh, that was like, why did that make me feel so uncomfortable? What does that mean? Actually, those things can be quite a relief if you can manage to think about them without getting stuck in the low place. Does that make sense? Like, I think it could be quite exciting. Like, if you say you'd had work that had sold really well, you know, I don't know what it was about. Something, you know, maybe you'd had a set of still lives and they'd all sold really well because everyone was like, oh yeah, that's great, I can relate to that. And then you do something else, and when you do another group and you think it's very similar, but that one just doesn't work. I can imagine that might be a, okay, right, well, now what? And that might propel you into working in a totally different way, where you actually break free of whatever your own expectations are for your work, which could be quite exciting.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about what you said about external validation, because I've just thought of a distinction there that I think applies to you, but I might be wrong. Like, I love the process of making paintings. I love the process of putting them up for sale. I love seeing the sale come in. I love package. Well, I don't love packaging up the word, but I love sending it out. Let's not go crazy. I like sending it out. I like when the courier picks it up. I like the whole process.
Yeah.
If a piece of that process doesn't happen, let's say the sales don't happen, like you, I'd be disappointed, but it's all part of a process that I love. Mm. So in that sense, if you mean external validation in the sense that somebody has to buy it in order for that process to work that I enjoy so much, that's what I think you mean by that. But where external validation becomes a problem is when it is your driver. So you are making work to get the external validation because that's what feeds you, not the process. And I see both. And I think you're the one who's fed by the process, including the selling. But the making is just as important. You wouldn't say, if this was your most successful art fair ever and everything sold on day one, you wouldn't go, right, let me make 10 more of those, because those people liked those made me feel good. You would say, right, what's next? And I think that's where I see the problem with external validation. It's when it leads everything.
So it's the timing of it.
You want, in that case, sales, but it might be your mother-in-law to say she thinks it's great, or your husband to say he thinks it's great, or your friends, or whatever it is. That can't be the driver, because that leads you down the path of, say, all the still life sold, I'll make 20 more exactly the same as those. And before you know it, you're really bored and you're just doing it or the second lot don't work as well because they don't have the energy and intentions that you made the first ones with.
Mm.
So I just wanted to pull you up a little bit on that, because you say that about yourself a bit, but I don't think you really seek external validation.
No, I think you're right. That as part of it. Yeah, part of completing it. And it was interesting because I was thinking, you know, I want to come and talk about this because I think there is a danger that, you know, you see other people, you know, celebrating wins and things going well. And, you know, this was tough. It was a tough weekend. Was there a little bit of me that was like, oh, yeah, well, it feels like it's being a bit hard for everybody else, so that makes it okay? Yeah. You know, that was there too. And then I thought, actually, is it even fair to come and talk about this? Because like I say, at the end of the weekend, it was not my best art forever by quite a long way, but it wasn't disastrous by any means. Does that invalidate the fact that, you know, it's worth talking about? This was hard and this was difficult. And also this month, something's happened that has never happened before, which again would have filled me with absolute dread previously, which is sent a painting off to a buyer, got a message from him and said, this says this has been delivered today. I've been in all day. There is nothing here. Courier company swears blind it was delivered. They send me an email and I'm like, well, that doesn't actually, where did you deliver it? Do you have a signature? Do you have a photograph? No, but we delivered it to the right address. Well, there's nothing in it for him to say it hasn't arrived. Anyway, so, you know, that again is one of those things that would genuinely have made me like sick with worry and not sleep. And I just kind of said, well, look, this has never happened before. I think it will turn up. If it doesn't, don't worry, I'll give you a full refund. And then he wrote and he said, oh, is there anything else that you have that's not on your website? So I sent him a couple of quick snapshot pictures. I said, actually, these aren't on the website yet. And he said, oh, I just love everything you do. Yes, that third one, please. I'll have that one as a replacement. But I'm going to be away again. So can you not send it until I get back? What happened while he was away?
The other one arrived.
The other one had been delivered to the wrong address to something way rather than something road. And the place that it had been delivered to, you know, that person had been on holiday, so they'd just taken time to get it to him. Not a word of apology from the courier company, mind. No. So we'll see where that one goes.
Yeah, I had one in Australia that actually did go missing. Australia Post. If you ever ship anything to Australia, people, do not use any courier that some of them end up switching to Australia Post at the end. And that painting went, they said it was delivered to their safe place. The customer said, we don't have a safe place and there's nothing here. And I had to refund them. Luckily, it was a tiny one, but it was a big shipping amount. So I think I had to refund about £500 and that's gone. And it never showed up.
The same is true for Royal Mail and USPS, the US Postal Service. Royal Mail within the UK, I think, is good, but don't use it for international to the States, because when it gets to the US Postal Service, the tracking goes out the window.
Yeah.
You know, this was tracked. This is the thing, is this was tracked. They said they'd done it.
Tracking turns out to be useless, because you go, well, it says it was delivered, but it wasn't. Yeah. And they say, well, it was delivered.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Fine.
But in terms of this conversation, again, it was another one of those moments where I suppose I just thought, I mean, you asked earlier what makes a difference to how you feel about this. I don't know, other than that sense of, right, well, that's that. Let's carry on then.
Maybe it's just experience. Maybe it's just experience of the ups and downs, so that we get more. The first time I lost a painting was in New Zealand, and that showed up after something like 12 weeks. Like, it just turned up all of a sudden. So we were both very relieved about that. But then this one never did turn up. That time I was feeling sick that whole way through, because that was the first time I'd shipped anything internationally. By now, I'm just kind of, I'll just refund them. It's a shame. I wish the painting hadn't gone missing, but I'll refund them. And just like you, the lady I refunded, she's bought other things since. She bought things from that exhibition that I did.
Yeah.
So she wasn't angry or upset it didn't turn her off as a customer. And I think a lot of it is just experience and time of doing it to realize that nothing is the end of the world.
Yeah. Maybe what we're saying here is, quite often we spend a lot of time living in worry of, like, what's going to be the worst thing that can go wrong. And, you know, sometimes that just makes us feel anxious. It makes us feel worried about things. We spend a lot of time and energy maybe thinking like that. And actually, maybe all I'm saying is that maybe when the worst thing that can happen, it's never the worst thing that can happen, is it, really, is the first thing. And actually, when it does, it's not so bad, because what are you going to do? You're going to sort it out to the best of your ability, and you're either going to carry on or you're going to let it stop you.
And I think if we can carry on, given, I was just thinking, given that you are quite visible now, I mean, I don't mean to make out we're Johnny Depp or anything, but, you know, within our little world, we're quite visible.
Mm.
And so when you have a big flop, that if you had had a big flop, and you still have to come and tell people about what happened, people say, how did the art fair go, or whatever, in your membership, it's difficult. It makes it more difficult than if you're, as we were a few years ago, more invisible and just doing things on your own and having your own little cry in the toilets when something goes wrong, but nobody else knows. So if you can carry on, if we can carry on through the ups and downs, it's kind of reassuring to everybody else that at least you don't have to come on a podcast and tell people about it if it's a big flop. You can just keep it to yourself.
I think it's funny, because I remember doing it a couple of years ago, like on an Instagram live, where I was having a great time at an art fair. And then I only kind of realized halfway through that I actually hadn't sold anything yet. You know, in my head, it was like a really great weekend. I was having a fab time. And it's like, oh, no, this is not the point of this. The point of this is to sell things. And I remember at that time saying, actually, do you know what? This isn't going so well, in the middle of it. And people saying, oh, my goodness, thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it is important. It is important.
When I was starting out, you did an Instagram live, no, a Facebook live. You probably don't even remember this. When Connected Artists was really small, and I think you'd been rejected for a show or something. You'd had a rejection. You'd obviously been crying, and you just stopped crying, and you came and did a Facebook live to the group to say it's not all good. Because at the time you'd had a few successful art fairs and things were selling and we were all looking up to you. And then you did this very vulnerable Facebook Live where you were obviously hurt at this. I think it was only something like the RA summer show. I don't think it was any, you know, everyone gets rejected for that except for a tiny amount of people. But anyway, you just were clearly upset and it made such a difference to me. Like, okay, so she doesn't just sail through life being perfectly happy and everything working out, which is how it kind of looked to me as right at the beginning, struggling. And so I've always kept that in mind and I try and do the same thing and not paint a portrait to anybody who's following me of perfect happiness and perfect success, because that, it's never that.
No, it's never that. It's never that. Yeah. So there we go. We exist to fail for your entertainment and pleasure.
You are welcome.
Right. Well, there we go. That's that. Onwards and upwards. So next I've got Manchester Art Fair, which I'm...
When's that coming up?
Oh, well, quite soon. And I want to do new work. So it was interesting that there was one painting that went up on the last day that out of the last group of work felt like a little bit of a little, you know how you get one that sometimes that's a little bit of a loner, and it had a small one that I think works very well with it, but it kind of didn't sit so well with all the others. I was like, well, what is it about this painting? What is it about the painting? Anyway, now that is back in the studio, hanging on the opposite wall as the kind of guide painting for whatever comes next. And I've been back in. I had this crazy day with like lurid lime green and purple. Seriously, what the hell is going on with those? And there was also another painting that was in progress that was, you know how when you get a painting that you think, oh, there's something there and I don't know what next and I can't touch it, but I know it's not finished. There was one of those and I had good fun on Tuesday roughing that up a bit and feeling excited about that now. So all of those kind of feelings are coming back. So I don't know what it will be at Manchester, but I just have a sense that I want to take new things. So yeah, that's the beginning of November. So not long.
Eek.
Not long. So we've got two very different months ahead, haven't we? I'm going to be just in on that. And what are your plans for your retreat time away with just you?
I really don't have massive amounts of plans. I have a couple of people I'm going to meet while I'm down there. I brought two rucksacks full of, I thought, oh, I'll just bring a small rucksack with a few art supplies and some sketchbooks. And then that spread to two big rucksacks that I could barely fit in the car. Because then I kept thinking, oh, just a bit of that. And I'll put a bit of acrylic paint in and maybe some of this and maybe some of that. So, but I'm not putting any pressure on myself for anything. I'm just, I want to go to galleries. I want to look at art. I want to meet some other artists. I want to go for walks on the beach with Riley or go for walks along the coastal path. I want to see some places I haven't seen since I was a teenager. But whether I don't, it's not like I'm saying, right, I'm going to have an art retreat where I get inspired by Cornwall, because I don't know if I'll find it inspiring artistically. I'm just going to let whatever happens happen. But I do know that my dog, he can't walk for long without rests. So if I bring a rucksack with just a few drawing materials and a sketchbook, he can have his rests and I can do some sketching and I can see if anything happens from it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's just experiencing maybe life at a slightly different pace, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, we'll see.
I want to go and, like you said, mention... you know, there's the Tate St Ives down there, isn't it? Which is great. Yeah, I want to go and see more of other people's art, good art.
Mm-hmm.
Good art with a capital G and a capital A, whatever that means. But you know what I mean? Stuff that is kind of exciting and challenges me and makes me think different. And so that's on my, going to do some of that next week as well.
Speaking of good art, are you watching the new Sensationalists on BBC?
Just stepping in at the editing stage to say I called the show the wrong name. It's called Sensationalists, the Bad Girls and Boys of British Art, and it's on BBC Two. It's also on iPlayer.
It's a documentary about the Damien Hirst, Tracy Emin, that whole, the young British artist movement.
Okay.
It's so interesting.
On BBC.
It's on BBC. So for anybody listening, it's on the iPlayer.
Okay.
And it's really, really interesting because just Damien Hirst himself as the leader of this whole thing, I've always kind of thought of him as somebody with a few interesting ideas and a lot of cheek. But actually watching this, seeing his amazing leadership and self-confidence and willingness to just go do all this stuff, very interesting. I'm quite admiring of him, and it just shows you what you can do if you think you can.
Yeah,
really, really.
Oh, that sounds good. Okay, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Now, we started watching last night Crossfire on BBC. It's a whole group of family in a holiday resort and a shooter comes. And we started watching that last night. Don't know how it's going to develop. Very good, very tense. Couldn't go to sleep afterwards. Had to watch some Frozen Planet in between.
Oh, I don't know if I want to watch
that. No, don't watch that on your, because it was just kind of like, oh, this is just kind of not
horrible.
Good. Yeah, lovely. Is that it for us today then?
That's it. I think we've done it. We kept it reasonably short, not very short, but reasonably. We're getting better.
We're getting better. Right. Have a lovely week. And I hope then, if you're listening, that this conversation, you know, might be worth thinking. What's the worst thing that you think could happen? Would it really be the worst? I don't know. Anyway, have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
How was that?
That was good, but... Oh, I was recording. Oh, no, I wasn't recording.
No, I was.
But the recording has worked. Overnight bag and then some pillows on top of that and then the computer balancing on there and
like
I've got
it.
A bed bag sitting hunched over so that I don't hurt my back.
Fully professional.
It is, really. It's very professional.
That's very good. Well, I'm on my second cup of tea for the day, so
right.
You know, that's a good, cheers, so that's a good start. So should we just launch into this one?
Yep. Okay,
right. Let's go. Thank you.